Hello, my name is Donald Hutera. I write for The Times and other places about dance and theater and performance and circus and et cetera, et cetera. And so why don't we go down the row here and introduce ourselves to these good people.
Okay, hi, I'm Nathalie. And I'm doing the role in the theater.
No, no, that's okay. Unless you want to.
No.
Meaning of life?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Hi, I'm John. My main role in Jiggly Circus is programming all the animations.
Okay.
I'm Geneva. I'm the director of the Jiggly Circus, founded by me and John.
Good. I'm Natalie. I do handstands and rope in this show.
I'm Sarah. I'm an aerialist and acrobat in this show.
And I'm Aurélie, and I do rope and trapeze with Sarah and Geneva.
Okay. Now, I'm going to ask these people a few questions and obviously open it up to you. Really relaxed, no tension, right? So, tell me a bit about what prompted this piece and what you did to put it together. What was the background, the research?
Okay. We knew that we wanted to make a show about quantum physics.
Why that?
All of our work tends to be about something scientific, whether it's inventions or movements or theories. And we've done shows about the invention of photography and the influence on women. We did a show about a conversation between Charles Darwin and P.T. Barnum. So when we were looking to do our next show, we wanted to do a science fiction show. We wanted that aesthetic. And quantum physics, my personal interest in quantum physics is I question whether the more that's understood about quantum physics, the closer that it becomes to metaphysics and that there's a true relationship between them. And that's my personal interest. Along with that, we were interested in setting up the structure of the show, having two spaces bound together by one soundtrack and how that would tell a story through association.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, how many of you have seen Sugar Bee Circus before? Raise your hands if you've seen other productions, just so you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, interesting. So not too many.
Okay.
So then I understand you also, you talked to somebody from Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of research, what kind of expertise did you seek?
Okay. I had mentoring from the Department of Consciousness Studies from the University of Arizona, which is headed by someone named Stuart Hamel. And he is an anesthesiologist who's interested in quantum physics. And he read a theory by Penrose that he found that his approach through microtubules and a more biological approach actually completed this theory. And so together they've been working at the relationship of, because he looks at consciousness because he's putting people to sleep and what happens to someone when they're under anesthesia is quite interesting. And so they've been working together. And I grew up in Arizona and needed to spend some time there. So I created this mentoring with him. To be honest, it was quite intimidating talking to him. The things, my ins into asking him, the things that interest me, the specific ideas were so quickly explained. And so it was an interesting process working with him.
Uh-huh.
And having to find the way of which questions were the right ones to ask and then having them answered so quickly, finding how much I could understand about that and what was the next question. And that was about 3 or 4 weeks that we worked together.
Spending how long per day or a lot of time?
To be honest, a lot of it was me just doing my own research. John and I were emailing back and forth ideas, and he did his own reading. We were kind of just reading and then having him as someone to go to. For example, like entanglement theory, I was quite interested in that. And so just having him explain it to me and then being able to just try to understand what that explanation was and if I understood it correctly. And that was the process of working with him.
So you gather and gather and gather, and then what happens once you've got a big ball of information,
mm-hmm.
and you have these people with these skills whom you've worked before
mm-hmm.
with before,
mm-hmm.
how do you put it together? How do you decide how you're going to realize it physically visually, orally.
Right. Well, we've talked about this. I'll just say something and then add on to that. It was interesting that the approach to making this show in some way started to parallel the ideas that we were dealing with. We started to set ourselves structures saying, okay, one side is the classic side, one side is the quantum side. We worked with that for a while and then found that it had some limitations that didn't work for us. So then we said, okay, one side is looking at mathematics while the other side is kind of looking at the perception of reality, the things we experience, and that's how we divide the space. And we develop some material that way. I think we had and then the role of the observer, so this thing that one side's the quantum side and one side's the classic side, and then when the observer appears, they both become the quantum side. And through each structure we set ourselves, certain ideas were developed and certain material was developed, and then at a certain point we found that structure limiting, and it became stressful. Like, are we saying the right thing? Does that conflict with that? Like, can we really say that? And at a certain point, we just had to let it go and say, okay, we've done our research. We've based these moments off of this. Now we make a show. We make something that's interesting. We work with the performers, and we see what happens.
And so for you performers, you people in the light, what do you bring to the final piece? How does she draw things out of you, or how do you draw things out of each other?
I guess we bring our skill to it in the first place, and then the way we work, I guess, is generally Geneva has a visual idea, and then we try and make something of it. Sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes it's something we can't really do using our skill. Like, for example, this routine with the handstands and the sticks on our feet, like, that came out of, I think, a different idea of things we couldn't do. But then we said, well, but we can do something similar. And we mostly try to find out what kind of visual idea Geneva has and then try and find an image that corresponds to that. And then after that, I guess it's our stage presence that we bring to it and what our interpretation of that is.
And how are you, as somebody who's spearheading all of this, but you're in it at the same time, is that where you partly come in because you're an outside eye, speaking about eyes? Are you the outside observer or one of the outside observers?
Yeah, definitely. Especially in terms of the kind of atmospheres that we try and create. Lighting is very important, and we also using the visual aspects as well. It's kind of interesting with the fact that I have to program all of the animations, that it actually fits quite perfectly with the mathematics and the sense of equations and the quantum world. But between Geneva having to perform, we need, there needs to be somebody else as well to set the lighting and for us to sort of be able to swap places effectively.
Okay. Now, because this piece only premiered yesterday, so this, you're seeing the second version of it, second time it's ever been done, what kind of things would you like to know, need to know, want to know, are you curious about from them, from your audience? I don't know how much talking you did with people yesterday, but since we have a public forum here.
That's great, actually.
What would you like to know from them? This is where we're putting you on the spot.
We've created a very non-linear narrative, and we've created a narrative that's driven by images that were evocative to us. Whether you know which theories we were looking at for which scenes, or that any of that is conveyed to you, I'm not really, that's not important to me. But I would like to know if you trust us as your guides through this story, if you feel like there were things that you picked up on, even if they weren't what we intended, did you believe that the imagery that we used and the journey that we took you on was that we knew where we were taking you, that we were in control of it?
That's pretty good. Anybody? Any kind of feedback you'd like to give? I saw a nod over there. Not that I'm picking you, but you nodded. You don't have to say anything.
I saw a kind of version of it about a week ago, but they put it out very long. So I've seen it pages. It's nice to see it today. So I think I have quite a good understanding of where the dimensions of each into each other and there's imagery which echoes it. And so that's kind of where I felt like that's coming across quite well. And just in terms of where it was a week ago and where it is now, it feels to me much more tangible, the difference between the two
mm-hmm.
worlds.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really good to see it, and I enjoyed it a lot.
Yes.
Why did you need to create the two different worlds?
I think it was...
I think initially, we had this idea of basically running the the soundtrack being played twice. So there was going to be two different perspectives on the same rule, which was the timeline of the sounds. And we first entered the development of the show by trying to split it into two different worlds, which is the classic world, which is basically classic science of gravity, Einstein, Newton, everything that we realise in the world that we're in now. And then the other side, which is going into the quantum, so when we go beyond the atom, and then where everything becomes spooky, weird. So, when you can't effectively understand what's going on, when you look at something, it might not actually be there. And so we wanted to create a parallel between those two worlds, and then for the audience to experience the same story, but switched over from perspective. And then we started making the show, and other things began to happen.
I mean, the story can only be told in two spaces, the kind of what we're trying to do, the association, for you to associate two events that happen at the same time, linked by this thread of the sound, hoping that when you hear a sound, you are able to reflect on what that experience was in a different space. That's the narrative, the meeting of the two spaces together, the two experiences coming together in that one moment of the sound that's holding the two together. That is the story, that space between, and the structure of it is the only, it allows that to happen.
Is that partly about parallel worlds or not?
Yes.
So you would say.
Yeah, I think it is the multiple dimensions, two perspectives, whether something can be in two places at once, whether it's only there because you're looking at it. All of that, theoretically, can be we attempted to explore by the division of the space.
Okay. Anybody else? Any kind of feedback? Anything you wonder about? Anything you didn't get or...
trying to tell it, but I trusted that the atmospheres and the worlds that you've created, although I was probably quite slow to pick on exactly what was happening in each of them, were so strong and obviously so richly informed by your research and how you played with those concepts in movement and visual imagery, didn't matter. So each space was a really interesting space to be in, as an observer, it was nice. And then towards the end, I wasn't here the second time. Maybe it's helpful for a bit of feedback, but the one thing that helped me link them really together was this idea of the character who could go between spaces.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, okay.
That was lovely.
Yeah, I was going to, because it was more the characters that linked them. Were you so aware of the soundtrack going
into the world of, okay, that's a possibility that this can time travel, or this can be,
there's a
link possible. And it was fun to have that.
Yeah, because they
were
five. I mean, one question I've had is, it's been really fun and also mind-boggling as well, working with two simultaneous shows. But the fact that you're aware probably of the other side of the theatre and you are hearing other noises filtering through from the other side, is that distracting or is it annoying or is it intriguing?
Okay.
Right.
Which are waiting to fill that space when you get to the other side. You know that sound is coming out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which makes it more fun than the game.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I suppose it's also simply, you know, very simple curiosity. What's happening on the mm-hmm. other side of the wall, of the curtain, et cetera, et cetera. Question for you about science, theory, history, et cetera, et cetera. But you also understand show business. There's game shows and red wigs and et cetera, et cetera. So do you want to talk about where that fits in to how you make things, how you do things, how you perceive the kind of work that you want to do?
I think it goes beyond styling. It's not just styling something the way you want it to look. I think that it's important to... I prefer performance that takes you to a different place, and so to remove yourself from the practical and the routine, the everyday, as part of the performance I enjoy. Aesthetically, I think each show that we make is quite different, and each one is kind of... It starts with some kind of vision, and then everything, the animations, the sounds, the costumes, the lighting, tries to hold true to that vision. And so I think the funness of science fiction was the first place that we started. We, you know, what did we want to do next? I love science fiction aesthetic. How could we do that? What would that be? And this is what it came...
I think the thing with game shows as well, in terms of like the human condition, is that it's all about the human has choice. And I think it's kind of important, you know, it's an aspect of consciousness, and it's kind of important to bring in that things aren't just happening. The game show is somebody having to be there on the spot and deduce something, or play a game to work something out. And I think that's quite important.
The gender thing, because science fiction and like lots of films like Logan's Run and like classic science fiction films from the 70s, the women are often in a very subservient kind of sexual role. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really interesting that you're playing with these ideas of physics and space and time, but it's performed by women, but very much not subservient, kind of serving the male mm-hmm. Logan on his run, whatever.
To be honest, when we first thought of this show, I wanted to work with the Seer Wheel, and the only artist that I could find was a man. And we tried to work with that idea of it being the man and the woman as some kind of duality. And at a certain point, I thought, oh, this is a little bit cheesy. This isn't really what it should be. And serendipitously, he got a contract and dropped out. And I thought, I want a woman Seer Wheel. And I found Natalie, and it was... She's lovely, and it's so satisfying. And it's very true that to have an all-woman cast on this show, our cast is all female, and now we've extended our cast, and it is still all female. Except for that doesn't count.
You're not on stage, you don't care.
But I think as far as being all-female performers who are performing a complex show based on concepts that are not so normally used for a show is very satisfying. And I think that is what we say. It's always before we perform, it's like, okay, we're a group of girls and we're talking about physics and we're A girls and we're really powerful and we're here. And it's really nice to say that to us while we look shit hot sexy and we're going to do some like physical awesome stuff. So yeah.
So what does the A signify? Because you said it.
A girl.
Atom.
Atom, okay, all right. That's no, it's one of the things I wondered. I was thinking atomic and
yeah,
atom and stuff.
Yeah.
Did anybody else have any thoughts about the A?
I thought it was
an
apocalypse or anarchy, possibly.
Narrative is the story.
You were going to say something. Hold on a second.
And we did, and what we, to the extent of the posters that are in the foyer, we kind of, I don't know if people noticed them, but we did kind of nod to the main concepts that we looked at in the show. And we did think that it would be good to provide some information. The information we provided ended up being also quite abstract, but
is for abstract. but I think it's also I haven't felt that you're shoving any theory down my throat or trying to cram my head. You're sort of just doing what you do, and then I'm allowed a certain amount of freedom mm-hmm. within being maneuvered around and from one space to the other as a time traveler.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to ask
no,
something
or
say something.
The aim to me looked like from a bigger chance, it was nice.
Yeah.
And that we've been divided into noughts and ones, which is binary. I didn't figure out a junction between binary code and a deck of cards, but yeah.
Okay.
And what is Sugar Beast team? You et cetera. What are you working on? What's in the offing? I know that this piece you want to be around for a while because you've spent
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
several years making it. So, but are there any definite plans, or is there a wish list or a dream list, or yes?
Well, this show.
Which galaxies would you be going to?
We have one more step of development with this show, which is we did a residency with Blast Theory to develop our use of pervasive technology, and we have a few really awesome things that incorporate the movement of the performers with the video much more closely than we're doing now. But we're dependent on being able to purchase. We're not sure if it's that we don't have access to equipment that can handle not crashing when we're trying to get the action script and the things to communicate with it. But we have some more. We're pushing our pervasive media to another level, which we hope to do if we get enough gigs booked so that we can reinvest in the show and take it somewhere. Then we'll up the game with our pervasive technology. That is our first priority. And then we have a dream traveling show, geometric pop-up tent thing that we get to travel with. But I think we're just going to try to take this one on the road first.
Okay. Does anybody have any last words? Do you have any last words?
I mean, if anybody has any... If there's any scientists in the...
Scientists in the house?
Anybody who does lots of quantum physics, I would love feedback on what we ended up doing, and I think that's... But if there's not... I don't know if there's anything that you think would be good for us to hear, anything that was...
No? Well, okay, go ahead.
I'm interested in the production side of theater, and you've got a large company. Are you all... How many of you are trying to make a living out of it?
We're all, this is all we do.
So are you making a living out of it?
No.
No.
Just barely? We don't know. We're trying.
So if there's anybody in the audience, a lot of money, you want to fund a conceptual circus performance company? And you also do... you've got some cabaret alter ego person character, don't you?
I do.
And
yes.
Who is that? And where can we see her? And
oh no,
no, we can't see her. It's private.
No. I perform under the name Lady G Luck, which has gone dormant for the last year of working on this project. But yeah, that's that. I do small cabaret acts. On we have some that we do minimal. Lightweight animations with, and some with like moving objects, and basically they're my bread and butter when we're not doing this. So if you see Lady G Luck listed somewhere,
then you know. All right, well, I'll have the last word. I am not a number, I am a free man. All right, thank you for being here.
Thank you.